Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Ashley Sterner. Parks and natural areas are not Maryland's only green spaces. Nearly a third of our state's land area is taken up by farms. And these days, farmers are facing a host of challenges. To learn about some of those, we checked in with Cord Bounds. He's a no-till farmer on the Eastern Shore, primarily growing corn and soybeans. He joined us by Zoom. Cord Bounds, welcome to On the Record.
Thanks for having me on, Ashley.
Tell us about your farm. Where's it located? How big is it?
We farm in Worcester and Wicomico counties down on the southeastern side of Maryland. And we do just shy of 3,000 acres of corn and soybeans.
How did you get into growing those crops in particular?
It's what is most demanded by the market. We have bosses as well, our landowners, and they take a rent check every year. And the competition for that rent demands that you grow a crop that is in demand to be able to pay the rent. So it's corn and soybeans. It's what the market wants us to grow.
Where do those corn and soybeans go to market?
Nationwide, about 40% of corn goes to animal feed and 80% or so of soybeans goes to animal feed. Locally, all of our corn crop, we actually have to import more corn to feed poultry on Delmarva.
So all your corn is staying on the Eastern Shore?
Yes.
Where does the soy go?
It's also processed on the shore for the most part. Purdue has a processing plant in Salisbury for soybeans.
So pretty much everything that you grow doesn't go too far from where your farm is?
Correct. It's within 20 miles delivery of where we're growing it.
Are all the farmers around you also selling locally?
Yes. Yes. All the farmers on Delmarva grow, for the most part, if they're growing crops the way 90% of America is growing them. They're growing corn and soybeans, and they're growing it for local demand of the poultry industry. So in essence, if you were to kick the poultry industry off the shore, grain farmers would also be done.
Do you see global demand impacting the demand for your crops?
Certainly, yes. Globally, the supply and demand dictate the price of the futures market on these commodities. So the price that we get locally is reflective of that futures market.
Where are the market pressures in terms of soy or of corn?
Internationally, we are still the number one corn grower, so our market pressures would come from our own weather impact, or lack of weather impacting our nationwide crop. So right now, the funds are saying that our crop is in excellent condition and we're going to grow a lot of corn, so they're short the corn market, which means that the price is going to stay low until we get a weather scare.
What about soy?
We are not the number one producer of soybeans. Brazil is. So Brazil's weather will impact the soybean market, and that would be opposite our growing season in the winter.
So their season is done, and what their season has done is impacting what you're doing now?
Yes, they're harvesting their soybean crop. So their beans will be going on the export market in another month or two.
Do you see the Trump administration's tariff policies impacting your industry at all?
It remains to be seen. After it all settles out, that would be the determining factor there. The threats of tariffs aren't exactly the same thing as an actualized tariff. If it goes another year, yes, it will definitely impact price of inputs, the cost of what it takes to grow the crop, as well as our potential export partners no longer buying from us. So that could also impact the price that we get for our crop.
Farm work changes depending on what time of year it is, what needs to be planted or harvested or transported. What's your work day like this time of year?
We're finishing up planting the crop this time of year. We have all the corn in the ground and most of the soybeans. We'll be starting a post-emergent application of herbicides shortly.
When do you wake up? What's the hour by hour?
I wake up at 5. Try to wake up at 5. It doesn't always happen. And I try and get a workout in by 7. And then help my family get out the door by 7:30. And then I go to work. If it's in season, I try for a 12-hour day, it's out of season, I try to be home by the time they're done school.
Was it more intense a month ago when you were still getting the corn in the ground?
Yes, it's typical 12-hour days when the weather is working and the equipment is working. More like maybe 14-hour days if you consider the prep work it takes in the morning and then, you know, getting home at night.
What sort of things do you have to prep?
Fueling up, washing the windows, going over the machinery, normal maintenance, checking for if anything has broken the day before that you didn't notice right away.
When harvest time comes around, what's a day like?
Much the same. Wake up as early as you can. Get going as early as you can. Mother Nature doesn't give us a whole lot of time to get the crop out. And we try and be very respectful of the soil and not go into it when it's muddy and just leave it until the weather gets right to perform the work in the field again.
That's Cord Bounds, who farms just shy of 3,000 acres of land on the Eastern Shore. You're listening to On the Record here on WYPR. I'm Ashley Sterner. Cord, you're not the first person in your family to farm some of this land. Tell us about your family history in farming.
Four generations, I'm the fourth one to do some of the same ground. And my great-grandfather's father, we don't really know what he did, so I would guess they probably grew crops too, just not on these parts.
You have kids, right?
Yes, we have three boys. They're 12, 10, and 6.
Do you think they'll be following in your footsteps in farming?
It's hard to tell right now. They really enjoy being around when we're doing the work and coming and riding with us. Most recently, we're trying to get pokeberry out of our field, and that's just a manual. You got to go out with a shovel and shovel it up, and they like helping with that too. Just as long as they're around you, they don't really care what. They just want to be involved.
Your farm practices what's known as no-till farming. That's a farming technique designed to minimize soil disturbance. Tell us how that works.
Sure. Obviously, from the name, we're not using a tillage. There's three things that are beneficial to tilling. The first is it warms the ground up in the spring. The second, it makes for a better seed bed for planting into. And the third thing is weed control. Our no-till operation, it got started in the early 2000s. My father took on a farm that had been no-till already, and he saw the benefits that it had given the soil over the couple decades that farmer had been doing it. And he decided to apply it to the whole operation.
What are the benefits of no-till?
It minimizes soil disturbance, which would preserve the structure and enhance organic material growth. It reduces erosion by up to 90%, which the dust storms in the Midwest have been primarily focused on freshly tilled fields getting blown in the wind. And then the third is in mitigating climate impact. The United States put out a calculator that allows you to calculate your CI, which is your carbon footprint, basically, index. And if you back yourself into a per acre figure using that CI index, we emit 0.4 tons of carbon per acre farming, and we sequester 0.54 tons of carbon in the soil when we add cover crop to the rotation of the corn-soybean mix. So in a net carbon sink into the soil by doing a no-till farming operation with cover crops.
No-till farming does require cover crops in winter. What cover crops do you grow?
Most recently, we've been using cereal rye.
What happens to the cereal rye after the winter?
We like to plant into it green. We like to plant soybeans right into it and then use herbicides as a tool to kill it and all the weeds. And then the soybeans grow and cover the ground with their canopy and shade out all the competition, hopefully.
One way that farmers deal with potential weather and economic challenges is by diversifying crops. Are you doing this?
Using that cover crop, I would say that is a diversity that we're adding to it. Adding other crops to the rotation would certainly be a benefit as well if you could get another cash crop in there like a wheat. Wheat in between corn and soybeans is fairly common, and it helps offset the nutrients that the other two consume. However, the wheat market is terrible, and it's very difficult to cash for a wheat crop right now.
I understand you've been experimenting with planting lavender?
Yes, I have about a quarter acre of lavender I'm trying. Been a good experiment so far.
Are you planning on continuing with that experiment?
Yes, it's about a 10-year crop, so that crop will last 10 years and I'll have a decade to experiment with it.
Are there any other things that you're doing to keep the farm running?
Investigating new crops, I think, is key, but you don't want it to become a distraction from your main goals, which is growing a crop and keeping your landowners happy, keeping your family fed. We have a wedding venue. It's named Colburn Farm, and it's not just weddings, birthday functions and scouting functions, and really enjoying the interaction with the public on operating that venue.
What is it that you most like about farming?
I like growing a crop, and I like the scheduling of my own time. Growing a successful crop is very rewarding. Recently talking with a friend of mine that is trying to get into a farmer veteran coalition to help veterans, and I agreed with that whole process where it can be very beneficial mentally to grow a crop.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I hope the summer treats your farm well.
Thank you, Ashley. Thanks for having me on.
Cord Bounds farms corn and soybeans on Maryland's Eastern Shore. If you missed part of this morning's conversation or want to listen back to past shows, check out the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Ashley Sterner. Thanks for joining us this morning. On the Record will be back on Wednesday.